Good morning. As always, it's good to see you, and especially I think at times like this when we have a good bit of sickness in the congregation and then everyone becomes valuable. And we're glad that you're here, and as I care for those who are not, because I know that the ones that are not here want to be, and we certainly miss you, it's obvious. And those things. Before I begin, I need to make a couple of points. One is that Logan Cutts, who is Stephen's son, is in Kenya right now. And I've received a report already that he's had two baptisms as a result of a sermon of his, of which I want you to know that if you've ever been involved with somebody's conversion, you can't wait to do it again. And I know though what he is that he's gung-ho at this point, and so we want to keep him in our prayers and keep the brethren over there as the church grows and continues. And we say that as well. We can't miss the ones that we support in Zimbabwe that have the same issues along those lines. We need to keep them in our prayers. Second point is that the amount of paper you have in your hand is because I don't intend to preach all that I did in my study, but I wanted to give you some of what I did do that you may consider the things this morning as a thought line, and hopefully clearly. There's also the point that as we're about to look at the eldership, this is not a study of the eldership. This is going to be a discussion about the manner of how it's been delivered and some things along those lines. And so there's no charge against them or that we would do that, even though I guess sometimes we would have that kind of thinking. That's not the point. As a matter of fact, this lesson is not about the point of 1 Timothy 3 yet, but an introduction to it, because I think that we have a misguided viewpoint when it comes to the eldership and its qualifications. Now, what I mean by that, and so let's do that. If we go back and look at chapter 1, we say, here's Paul going to pass the torch. I want you to remain here, and I want you to stand against strange doctrines and against the myths and the genealogies that are going to come about and the things that lead to endless discussion, because endless discussion is maybe the characteristic of missing the point. Now, I'm not really trying to say that in a final way, but I'm making the point that many times that that's exactly what happens. We get broken down into the details of something, and we get so caught up in the detail that we miss the point. And so with that being the case, he goes on and makes those statements to Timothy. I want you to be that the law is good. The law is actually written for sinners, that they may know that they are sinners and that they may turn from their sin. And as far as the Christian goes, we have already made that decision and have turned from our sin as you have. You have turned from your sin, and so the law is still good because it still points up the details of things you may still need to work on. And so, but the fact that your mindset has shifted, you've done that. Now, we want to teach the mindset. That's what I'm saying. So, you fight the good fight, okay, and pray, keep the faith, keep your conscience, teach real lessons, the ones that affect the heart. Okay, and so, chapter 2, we have men, and I want to make the point that men are told to pray and lift up holy hands, okay, praying for all men everywhere and that type of thing. But I want you to see that as a metonymy of sorts, that as we drink the cup, we don't drink a cup, we would drink the contents of the cup. And the understanding is that the cup represents the whole thing of what we do when we take the Lord's Supper, okay? And we would understand that. Well, this is men pray, and why do they pray? They pray because it is a personal connection to God. That's what it's about. And so that as you pray, pray properly. Now, what's the proper methodology? Well, first is that my heart be in it. I don't pray to God for things that I don't intend to be involved with. Now, I'm not saying that we don't pray for things that I can't change, that only God could change. And so, therefore, I pray for those things. I do. But the sense of prayer is a personal connection to God, praying for the things that are wholesome as God would have them be, and it is no more personal in anything that we do than in your prayer. And so may it be that way. May we pray properly, and that we don't leave other men out. We don't pray for demise of people, and I know that David did that. He prayed for the demise of his enemies. And I get it. But for the Christian, we lay aside those kinds of things and we are worshiping from a holy standpoint without wrath and dissension, without complication, if you will. And then women, of course, are given the idea that they are, by attitude, it is not about how you dress. It's not what you look like on the outside that makes a difference. It is who you are, and let your good works be what they are. And so the appeal again is for the heart to be dedicated toward the things of God, and that not only is our worship, but our manner is also that way. That they, women are adorned by their good works, and it's not a list. It's not about whether you have braided hair and costly pearls or gold and costly garments. All we would have to do then is we'll spend our money on something else and leave those four things off, and we're going to be great before God, right? That's not what's being talked about. This is an attitude. And so the attitude is that women are to, as men do, give themselves to God and to godliness. Okay, and so those are the values that God does. And be submissive is a declaration. Being submissive is a declaration of godliness. Okay, so now we come to chapter 3 where we're into spiritual leadership. And now when we come to spiritual leadership, is spiritual leadership about taking the things that we've read in our scripture reading, and we'll read it again in just a second. Is that what it's going to be about? And I'm asking you the question, what should spiritual leadership look like, and who does it belong to? And so first of all, is there are elders, an office in the church that is going to be discussed, but spiritual leadership is in every single Christian. Everyone. And when we look at what the details are, then all of us should be seeking the details of this as is possible, and along those lines. Okay, and so they are spiritual men, okay, that are to be in leadership roles. So I want us to understand that. It isn't that the detail of leadership is what determines spirituality. It is spirituality that determines the leadership. So when I come to that, we're not checking off boxes, but we are to see the man behind these things as we look at it. And so as we do that, I think it's interesting. Obviously, or I wouldn't be talking about it. All right, so let me stop and thank y'all for being here and willing to listen to my ramblings at times. I'm so glad that we have that. Glad to know that people care about what God says and that they really do consider things. And so I realize I'm somewhat out there, but not really in my mind. 1 Timothy 1 or 3, beginning in verse 1, says, "It is a trustworthy statement that if any man aspires to the office of overseer, it is a fine work that he desires to do. An overseer then must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, temperate, prudent, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not addicted to wine or pugnacious, but gentle, peaceable, free from the love of money. He must be one who manages his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity. But if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God? and not a new convert, so that he will not become conceited and fall into the condemnation incurred by the devil. And he must be have a good reputation with those outside the church, so that he will not fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. Okay. So as we read that, we are generally familiar with the passage, but I want you to understand the sense of this is spiritual leadership, and that if we're going to take that idea, I need to separate the two words, and that's what today's lesson is about, separating spiritual and leadership. So, the word spiritual offers the idea of following God and being involved with the ideas and makeup of an eternal being that is defined as love. Okay, if that's my idea about this, personal definition, you could adjust it to your own. Leadership is to apply whatever principles offered by the Bible to self and then become practiced enough to be able to lead others in those practices by their choice to do so. Would you call that leadership? And I think that's what it is. So, when I take that then, I go back and we've been studying first the book of Judges, and now we're right at the end of all of that. And as we look at the Judges and we see the time of the Judges, for me, the sense of the Judges is that God has brought the Israelites out of slavery through the desert, given them their law, now given them the land, His promises have been made, and now we live together. That we're going to walk together, God and man. And that every man should look to God as his leader, and that you would look for your direction there, that you would look for your life there. But instead of doing that, they do something else. Now then, if I were to describe the Christian, this method failed. Using a physical law that worked that way, it failed. Okay? And because it failed, and God sees that they kept the details of the law without keeping the heart of the law. They didn't love me anymore. They didn't do it because they have a relationship with me. They did it because it said so. And they made mistake after mistake after mistake in doing that. Under Christianity, every man will learn before he becomes a Christian and know what it is, and he will choose by his heart what God would have him be and do and act. And he will live his life that way. And I will be their God, and they will be my people, and I will remember their sins no more. Jeremiah 31. So, we understand what was intended, and now then I ask the question, have we today as Christians done the same thing that the Israelites done by taking and making the detail of the law the point rather than the heart? And so as we go to look at the description of what an elder, our spiritual leaders are to be, what are we looking at? And I'm not going into details today. You just need to know that. But it just bothers me that if Timothy was instructed, don't try to talk to the guys who want to end up in endless discussion. And so how many children are children? How many must be believing? How much of this? How much of that? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And so how hospitable must you be? How good a teacher must you be? How much of whatever, and we could pick it apart, and you see my point, and that's the details that I'm suggesting are there. So, how should the spiritual man look as compared to his former carnal man? Because I'm not talking to elders right now, I'm talking to you. Compared to who you were when you first came to God, And I really ask this question in a very serious way to those who have been raised in the church. You don't have the clarity of the change that I do. I'm raised in a denomination, thinking a certain kind of way, turned completely over and changed into something else because I chose to and because I needed to based on what the scriptures say. Those who have been taught it and from birth, and that it's always been the right example around you, I don't know if you see a time when you change from this to what you should be. And that makes me even question what Paul was saying to Timothy when he says, when you sat at the feet of your mother and your grandmother, you were taught the scriptures. But who you are today is a different person. And what I'm giving to you is something even greater than that. Okay, and so the faith, you see, there's the answer is complicated in that the change does not take place all at once. I think anyone of experience would tell me that. That the change doesn't make itself known all at once, but the belief does. The belief is a moment where you did not believe, and then you came to believe that not only God is, but that we must diligently seek Him. That it isn't a passive thing, it is an active thing. That it's not what mom and dad said or what I've always known, but something I'm now dedicated to pursue, and not simply pursue, but to teach as a method of life. Okay, and so the faith, its definition according to scriptures, okay, is followed by obedience and creates the new person and denies the pleasures and goals of the earth and the desires of their former heart. We let go of who we were. Nothing is to be put before the will of God. So that the quick conclusion is to say that to be spiritual takes a mind that believes in Christ, His history, His actions on the earth, His death, the reason for it, the hope of eternal life, and to say that you believe changes the manner of your life. To give an example of one who has no roots on the earth but has rejected physical life, carnal goals. Our faith is actually stated by our lives and not so much by our mouths. Now, I've heard a sermon one time that I happen to agree with that when our confession is our profession. That my confession that Jesus Christ is the Son of God becomes my profession of my life. Okay, and so you would get it. So that it would seem that spiritual men have a distinct quality that carnal men don't have. And what that would be then, you see, is that it would seem that they would be highly recognizable as uncommonly wise or as fools, depending on who the listener is. You follow me on this. Okay. You're a dummy, according to the world. While you are a spiritual man and by spiritual people praised. It brings the question, who are we if we're unrecognizable as being committed to either side? All right, so you get the idea. Leadership, and by the way, there's definitions there both from Webster and from Vine's Expository Dictionary, and that you have that in the handout that I left in the foyer that has got all these things that give you the words. I tried to give you what it would take to understand that. That leadership and leading is not a word that Vine's goes after and that the Bible is there, but guide is. And so there's the sense of being a guide. And the sense of being a spiritual leader, that whatever issues it is to have a spiritual life and to be what we should be before God, that my attitude then would then cause my actions to conform. Bill said it this morning in class about having a reality to what our thinking is. We have emotion, but it needs to have a real sense to it, a practical aspect to it. And that would be what that would be. And so that if the followers are to take on the things that we're talking about, then what should the leader be like? So my second note that I want to make is that the leadership of a congregation will be dependent upon the spirituality of the congregation. And so if we're not particularly spiritual, we don't mind having leadership that's not particularly good. The higher the quality of membership, the higher the quality of leader that is required for them. Therefore, the leadership may have a great variety on the earth, while the expectations of God do not fluctuate. I'm reminded of the statement that we are not to measure ourselves by ourselves. Okay, because if that's the case, if I am the elder of a congregation that isn't all that spiritual, that doesn't necessarily mean I'm okay. If anything, I may be in some serious trouble because I need to tighten up some of the things going on. I'm reminded of Matthew the 15th chapter in verse 12. Then the disciples came to him and said, "Do you know that the Pharisees were offended when they heard this statement?" And he answered and said, "Every plant which my heavenly Father did not plant shall be uprooted. Let them alone. They are blind guides of the blind. And if a blind man guides a blind man, both will fall in the pit." Now this brings us to the point that when it comes to selecting leadership, we need to be careful with who we do. And I want us to make that point. Again, you have in both Vines and Webster's definitions of those things that can, they can sway this. But it is obvious that our leaders are the ones that will move us in a direction, and the methodology can be varied. There is a direction that a spiritual man takes that carnal men do not. The thing is, they can look like they're good when it's not. Do we want to grow this congregation? We absolutely want to grow the congregation. Do we want to grow the congregation by letting go of the details of what God said? No. At least for me, that's my answer. No way. So that as we come to these things, it's our intentions then are not the point. I think everyone intends well. I believe that you as an individual intend well. Okay, so if I intend well to teach my children the gospel, I'm going to teach my children the gospel, but how thorough I am, how detailed I am, how attitudinal or not I am, which teaches more, the detail of the stories, or in this case, the qualifications of an elder, or the attitude of the man? And as you can see, there would be a lot of varied answers along those lines. So, Christian leadership is one of attitude discussed in terms of the outpouring of a central attitude of the heart. That's the point. Our leaders in spiritual things are to be men and women whose heart's desire is to please God. That's the point. And then the outpouring of these distinct examples of what godly attitude should be offers evidence to the central attitude. I'm not sure that that's not being redundant. I have a heart that wants to please God. I do things that I think are what is pleasing to God. But I'm the guy telling myself I'm okay. Maybe so, maybe not. Okay, that's the Daryl that's up here right now. And so when I go back and then I see this, that a man who aspires the office of an overseer, it's a fine work that he desires to do because we need good leadership. But what does good leadership take? And I'm going to tell you, it takes, number one, before anything else, a good work ethic. So what's the work ethic for spiritual things? And I'm asking that as a real question. What is the work ethic of spiritual things? Is it that I pay attention every day, that I study my Bible daily? Is it about my prayer? Is it about consistency of things? What is it that makes for your acceptance of who you are before God? It's a real question. The outpouring of these distinct examples, okay, of what a godly attitude should be, offers that evidence of what my heart is. Now, I'm going to give you one because I don't know how to talk about this stuff. I really don't, but I'm going to make the point. When I first became a Christian, I was asked to do things publicly, and I was afraid. Who am I to go up and lead a prayer among Christians? And I was afraid. I was asked to do things that in my estimation, felt that I should not be asked to do, that I should be sitting here learning. I shouldn't be up front. And in that situation, it comes to this. If someone were to ask me to do something for the sake of God, would I do it? Yes. Would I do the thing I'm afraid of? Yes. What if I humiliate myself? He died for me. And so if you asked, I tried. What if I don't have time for it? The preparation that it's going to take to do the Lord's Supper or to preach a sermon or to do the things that need to be done. What if I don't have time to get that done? Shall I do it? And my answer, initially, from a heart that doesn't know anything except that I believe in God, said, yes. If you ask me, I will make it happen. I will change the rest of my life, but God will not get my seconds. He will get my first. That's me. That's the clarity of thinking on a simple, simple basis. And that's the part of letting the heart rule our actions, not that we're looking to conform to the actions that have been listed above. That's what I'm really talking about. We have made it in the discussion congregationally of details for the eldership and for leadership as being things that can be discussed and qualified and this and that and what if and all those things when it's not that. It is a matter of what are you committed to? And so will I do the thing that God tells me to do or will I not do the thing that God tells me to do? And it's that simple. It's that simple on personal sin. And yet there have been many things that have been hard for me to put away. And I want us, and let me just say, I'm not trying to set myself up here. I'm trying to say I am just like everyone else in the battle. The spiritual battle for control is the key on this earth that we serve God. So, it is for all Christians to have this distinct and singular attitude. However you describe it, and you can describe it your way, okay, but it is especially so in leadership that we see those things. All right, it must be recognizable then by the conduct of the men involved. Okay, and when I say that, when I think about the eldership, I never leave the wife of the elder out of it. Because she is as involved with the things of not only her own family, but of the church, that nothing happens unless they both are working toward those things. The combination of two godly-minded, dedicated people toward the attitudes and actions of Jesus Christ will build a community of believers as God would have it be. Now, why do I say it only takes two like that? Because I've watched what God can do with one. Meaning Jesus himself and then everyone else that was a man who was just a man who accomplished great things because God was with him. Now, there are imposters today just like there were then, and that they will be judged. However, it is for us to judge that we have men of caliber and commitment as leaders in the spiritual realm. I must follow my spiritual leadership. God told me that we are to be in subjection to them. But let me also say, as long as they are about God's business. There is much that is subjective in considering what a godly man should look like, and there is no man that would qualify himself if he stands before God honestly. I don't need to be the leader. That's what the conclusion would be. I am but a sinner, and I don't need to be the leader. That's going to be the way we think. Therefore, make men of integrity spiritually our leaders, knowing their imperfection, and we do this knowing that they're not perfect. It's essential. You know, a year or two ago, we were talking about the fact that it all comes down to the resurrection of Christ, his death, burial, and resurrection. But no, it takes it all. It takes him coming. It takes him being who he was, saying what he did, said and did. It took his life to make his death that kind of valuable. Then it took his attitude and willingness, because that's what we're emulating. And then we talk detail without talking attitude too often. And so this is of essential importance, that spiritual leaders are not necessarily men of worldly success. Now, I'm beginning to see that as a trend in the Church of Christ, that we are having men that are successful leaders in business be our leaders in spiritual things. And I'm not going to say, as a matter of fact, I might, a truly spiritual man may be a failure in worldly terms. And we need to hear that. We must be careful to ensure that we choose well by our leadership choices, because if we do miss the mark with our leadership, we can miss the mark as a congregation, in all of us. So may we be careful and loving and wise in our choices without losing our hearts to dissension as to those choices. May we let our hearts be as little children who trust without cause. And I say that at times because it is, yet not to make it so hard that no one can be our leader. We need heroes of faith and men that are faithful. Renee and I were talking about spies, of all stories, about spies and what they look like. And we have all the movies that you've seen about spies and what they do and the grand things. And they change the world with the actions of one man, blah, blah, blah. That's movies. The true spy just looks like your friend next to you. But he's working for another country. Elders will look like our friends because they are. And it won't look fancy or classy. That's not the point. It's godly. If we are going to be loving brethren, forgiveness is going to be the recognizable aspect that we see in those that would be spiritual. Everybody has made a mistake, and everybody's made a big one. And if you can forgive yourself and you ask God to forgive you, can you not forgive someone else's mistake? When we look at them, we look at ourselves. And so this is going to be the lead-in to next week, when we actually look at the details of what it is to be an elder, a spiritual leader. But I'm going to look at it from an attitudinal standpoint, not from a detail standpoint. I hope that you'll look forward to that and forgive my ramblings of the day. As always, we offer an invitation to all those that need the Lord, whether it be to be baptized into Christ or whether it means to be restored. And if we can help you in any way, won't you come as we stand and sing?